This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, a federal bribery investigation intensifies, and an NBA Hall of Famer says he has a gambling problem, kind of. We're going to talk about those topics and more with our roundtable participants today. Joining us from our Chicago bureau, Laura Washington. She's a columnist with the Chicago Sun-Times. Also with us, Joe Davidson, an editor with the Washington Post. He joins us from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. And from member station WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Nat Irvin. He's a professor of future studies at Wake Forest University. Before we get into those topics, folks, I wanted to get your impressions on what you just heard from Shelby Steele. Laura Washington, it was interesting to hear Mr. Steele talk about that he no longer sees racism as a barrier to success for Black Americans. Do you agree with that?
I'm very happy for him. I wish I could say the same. No, I don't agree with that. I think that it is true that racism and the effects of racism are not as overt as they were 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, but they are still very real. You see study after study that talks about continuing problems in terms of employment discrimination, housing discrimination, mortgage lending, inequities in the schools. There are still many divides in terms of achievement between blacks and whites and other people of color in this country. And I don't think that necessarily is intentional, but it's part of the structure of our system. And those are things that we have to be vigilant about continuing to address.
Nat, let me give you perhaps the trickier question. He said that, and Tony Snow said this as well, that it's no longer the number one problem facing Black America.
Well, I agree with that. And I agree generally with Shelby Steele's perspective on how blacks have indexed against whites and how it is. At some point, you know, you become fixated with the majority and you stop focusing in on your own personal development. I think that Steele adds a very important voice to this whole discussion about the future of race and racism and what the responsibility of blacks have for themselves. I think it is important to have the conversation so that the next generation of blacks can begin to see themselves differently than we have seen ourselves. I'm 54, and certainly I understand, as do my parents, and I'm sure that, as Laura said, we still have those kinds of matters that still come up in terms, and the studies always show that. But the real issue to me is something philosophical about how blacks see themselves both now and in the future. Do you identify yourself when you're looking at what progress you can make? Do you look first to white folks or do you look at yourself? And I think that's fundamentally what makes freedom the most frightful kind of a thing, because we are at a point where now we are in control. And I believe this wholeheartedly, that we are in control of our destiny, but we've got to seize it. And part of it is letting white folks go.
Here's what I found interesting, Joe Davidson, in what Shelby Steele had to say. Those who are totally counter idealistically to Mr. Steele, Reverend Jackson, Cornel West, Tavis Smiley, and others who are pushing the covenant with Black America, essentially say the same thing that Shelby Steele said, and that is it's time for individuals to take course of their destiny and not worry about what is outside and to ready yourself for the world.
Well, I think that's a good point, and I was just thinking that we often, when we hear people like Shelby Steele talk and there's commentators such as ourselves discussing it, sometimes we break it down into the liberal and conservative camp within Black America, when in fact those who have preached, I think, the strongest for self-reliance, such as Black conservatives do, have really been those who are the most radical within the Black community, I think. I mean, think, for example, of the Nation of Islam, Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X when he was in it and after, people who promoted the Republic of New Africa, who wanted to break away from the United States. None of these people were considered conservatives by any stretch of the imagination, but their theme had to do essentially and primarily with self-reliance in the Black community. So I don't think that, while I think there's certainly a lot to disagree with, and I think certainly many people do disagree with much of what Professor Steele has to say, I do think there is a greater degree of common ground, even though they might approach that common ground from different avenues, than is often readily apparent or acknowledged.
All right. Let's turn our attention now to Trouble in Paradise, if you will, and that is with Louisiana Congressman William Jefferson, who is alleged to have taken bribes, if we are to believe a Kentucky-based chief executive of a telecom firm. He says that he paid William Jefferson through his wife's company over $400,000 in bribes to promote the company in Africa. We should note that the document itself only refers to the congressman as Representative A. It does not identify him as Congressman Jefferson, yet we know for a fact that Vernon Jackson, who's the chief executive charged here, has said, in fact, it is Congressman Jefferson. We tried to contact Congressman Jefferson's office, have not heard back from them yet as of airtime, but we should note that the congressman's office released a statement saying that the congressman has not been charged and he denies any wrongdoing and his office is cooperating with the investigation. Joe, you're in Washington. We should note and cover politics. We should note that this has been an ongoing investigation, a shadow that has been cast over Bill Jefferson for some time now.
Well, and it seems like the circle is tightening. There, in fact, have been two associates who have said that he was the recipient of bribes or initiated bribery attempts. And I think that that this is obviously has to have him and others around him feeling very, very worried. It's interesting to note that the House leadership, Representative Pelosi, has called for him to be investigated. Members of the Congressional Black Caucus, at least some of them have contributed to his support in the past, and so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in those circles. I think that there was an article in the Roll Call, which is a paper that circulates on Capitol Hill, that says that while the leadership hopes that he will resign, they are afraid to come out too strongly against him for fear of alienating or offending the black members.
Even if we don't find wrongdoing here, Laura Washington, part of the problem, if believed that this money was paid to the congressman's wife's company, is the thought of impropriety, the idea that you have to be oh so very careful nowadays when you're on Capitol Hill.
Well, absolutely. Joe makes the point that the Democrats are hoping that he will resign, and one reason for that is obviously they're afraid of the taint of scandal. They've been pretty successful so far as pushing that to the Republican side of the aisle with you know the guilty pleas of people like Jack Abramoff and Duke Cunningham, and they don't want to look like, you know, well, it's business as usual for both parties right now. So that's obviously an important thing on Capitol Hill. The other thing is it just continues to amaze me how vulnerable these folks seem to be to corruption. You know, you know you have to be, you're being held to a very high standard. You know the feds are, you know, the feds are all over Capitol Hill, and yet you blatantly, and this is alleged, but you blatantly cut deals with folks for money. The combination of greed and stupidity in Washington is a very dangerous combination.
Now, it isn't the real problem here, though. The continuing thought, the fight for ethics reform in Washington, we continue to see the same thing over and over, year after year after year. And shouldn't the American public finally say to Washington, clean up your act or we're going to clean it up for you?
Well, you would expect that, Ed, but, you know, the House, I believe, just recently passed an ethics bill, which apparently has no teeth. And by November, what Congress is expecting is that Americans will have forgotten about it, and that probably will be the case. Although, you know, in this particular instance with William Jefferson, who, you know, hopefully he'll have the good sense to resign and won't use the Cynthia McKinney defense that, you know, he was black and that they're after him because of it. You know, the tragedy here is that the people in Louisiana are the ones who will suffer. The very folks, you know, who suffered after Katrina, now they have an effect. They have a congressman who's going to be completely ineffective. And it comes
right,
at a time,
important.
As I said, when you're trying to get support for the state of Louisiana. And what is it now? It's proof positive that the whole way that, you know, money is distributed in Louisiana is corrupt.
It's not proof positive, though. Let me say this. And again, we have to reiterate time and time again as we talk about this that all of this is alleged, and the congressman has suggested that he denies any wrongdoing.
Right.
But remember this, the gentleman who's pled guilty, he's based in Kentucky. This is a Kentucky-based firm doing business with folks in Nigeria. So they're, you know, not only are the voters of Louisiana being shortchanged in terms of political leadership, they're not even getting the benefits of these contracts.
Right, right.
All right.
So, well, that's enough.
Okay. Yeah, we better shut you down before you get in trouble. All right. What we'll do is continue to watch that and continue to reach out to Congressman Jefferson's office. Maybe he'll even come on the program and talk to us as best he can. We know the famous line, can't say much. Investigation is ongoing, but perhaps he'll be able to come on with us. All right, we turn our attention now to something that's very interesting. This was really sparked by a autobiography that the golfer John Daly is coming out with, where he talks about losing between $50 million and $60 million over a 12-year period due to a gambling addiction. Many people question whether $50 to $60 million is a bit high based on what his projected earnings have been during the PGA Tour and what he may have been able to make outside. But nonetheless, it was millions and millions. I think that people could, in fact, agree on that. And then we hear from Charles Barkley, who says that he's lost about $10 million $10 million over the years due to his gambling addiction, which he says is a problem. Well, no, it's kind of a problem. I just need to get this under wraps. It's interesting to see, Joe Davidson, how Charles dealt with that and talked about it. But more interestingly is the idea of the sums of money professional athletes and those often in the entertainment field will play with.
You know, that is interesting because in his when he was talking about how it's a bad habit, but I'm going to continue doing it, he said at one point that I should be playing, this is a quote I'm reading from the L.A. Times yesterday, he said, I should be playing $1,000 a hand instead of $20,000 a hand, because if I played for $1,000 a hand, I probably could lose $50,000 to $100,000 a hand instead of millions of dollars. Well, you know, that's even if you're a multimillionaire as he is, that seems like a to me at least, someone who is not a millionaire, it seems like a pretty incredible statement. And I think on a certainly more serious level, when people say that, you know, I don't have, I'm not addicted, it's a bad habit, you know, clearly we have to remember that people who are addicted often don't know it. They don't realize it. And I'm not suggesting that Charles Barkley is. I don't know him. I don't really know what he does. But it is known that folks who have addictions to various substances or to gambling will deny it as long as they possibly can. And they really don't believe they have. They really believe they can kick it until it just destroys them.
How much of this, Laura, is just the common man's inability to wrap your mind around that kind of money? One might say that it's all relative, that a guy playing pinochle for $2 a hand is the same as Charles Barkley playing for $20,000 a hand.
Well, the guy playing pinochle probably can't afford to lose the 20 bucks he's losing either. I think what people are having trouble wrapping their minds around is, and I think Mr. Barkley is a number one candidate, is that, you know, gambling is an addiction. He made another comment in that same story where he said, you know, it's not like drugs and alcohol. This is I'm just into the competition. It's a really serious addiction problem in this country, and the denial perspective aspect is it's part and parcel of the problem.
Well, you know, go ahead.
And I was just going to say that I was amazed at how much of a non-story it is that you could that Barkley could claim to have lost that amount of money. And I think what it reflects is the fact that gambling is such a big business, not only in this country, but worldwide. I saw numbers that said that basically it's about $4.5 billion gambled every day in the world. And, of course, with most of the states having lotteries, we have people all the time who sit in churches on Sundays who are gambling every Sunday. I mean, gambling every weekend. It doesn't seem to make that much of a difference. I mean, after all, Secretary of Education recently had to disclose his gambling problem. So it's something widespread. You see, I mean, it's become a part of the fabric of this country. And the fact that an ex-athlete now, you know, claims to have, you know, gambled $10 million, you know, people just kind of go ho-hum. I don't see how he could do it, but it's his money, as Barkley says, and so it's not my problem. I certainly wouldn't do it.
Joe, isn't that a part of the issue that we all try to justify what we do, and because this has become so widespread and because it is a common man's addiction, the idea from just the old numbers game to the new lottery game to the pool during football and basketball season, it's almost a wink and a nod that it's okay and almost a pat on the back that, man, Barkley's losing millions. Wish I had that.
Well, perhaps so, but when you talk about how common it is, one of the things we have to remember is that when it comes to the lotteries, it's the poor people. And you look
that's
in these
true.
In these states where they have lotteries, and in the cities where lottery tickets are sold,
and most of the lottery tickets, black people.
That's right. Yep. Poor black people are coming out of what little money they have to essentially throw it away because the chances of winning, the jackpot are minimal, and so it's a real issue that's perhaps we can chuckle at on the one hand, but it's also pretty sad on the other.
And these lotteries, you have to remember too, are state sanctioned. I mean, the government sanctioned lotteries to support state revenues, and so we've become as voters, we've become addicted to these revenues as much as to the actual practice. So how are you going to eliminate something that's become part of the government structure?
Yeah, how do you if you're a preacher?
Lottery?
Well, if you're a Baptist preacher, how do you preach against the lottery when, folks in your congregation who win, they put the money in the plate? We just have a different approach now.
Any of you brave enough to say whether you played the lottery, even when it got up to $300-400 million?
It's new in North Carolina, and I have not yet done it. But when the big one comes around, statistically, I'll spend the $5 to try.
Right.
Admitting that,
stay
I
away from
but I'm
those
tempted.
Machines. All right. And Laura, you're conspicuously silent, so
no,
we'll leave it at that.
I bought one of those big tickets once or twice. You don't want to win a lottery. You ever hear about what happens to people who win the lottery? Their lives are ruined.
Ruined. Well, I don't know.
Stay away from
it. Depends on how much is in that jackpot. All right, Laura Washington, Joe Davidson, Nat Irvin. Thanks so much. Greatly appreciate it.